Here at the 2017 American Farmers and Ranchers Convention, we're visiting with one of their speakers. One of the keynotes this year. Two places on the program. That's pretty impressive. Trent Luce joining us today from Nebraska. Trent, you've gone around the countryside for a bunch of years now talking about why we need to do a better job in telling the story of agriculture. And you've gotten into a lot of places where you've had that chance to be a real advocate for farmers and ranchers, it seems like.
Not enough, Ron. Appreciate you continuing to be here and assisting and telling the story yourself. And most people, by the way, can have a keynote address and get their message in one presentation. It takes me two times to be able to explain what it is that we need to do. It really comes back to one word, confidence. I don't understand why farmers and ranchers who do it every single day, who take care of the land and protect the environment, and we have a better environment today than we've ever had, and yet we produce more with less from fewer resources than we've ever done. And the farmers and ranchers feel like they're the least qualified to tell the story. So really, I'm nothing more than a glorified cheerleader and a little bit of a confidence coach for the men and women who do it every day to tell the story. I have been fortunate to find myself in some very urban locations in the past few years, probably since you and I have met. I got in the middle of the fight in New York City to save the horse and carriage sector. That created other opportunities. But even though the disconnect exists in our largest urban areas, we find that our own farm and ranch families, there are people that don't understand antibiotic usage, understand genetic modification in crops. They don't understand water quality. They don't understand what nitrates and phosphorus are and what they do. And so the best conversations really happen when our family gathers and begin to talk to those that maybe moved away. Maybe they moved to Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Kansas City, whatever the case may be. And they have questions, and they're getting those answers from the wrong folks. Let's start having the conversation within our own family.
Good place to start, obviously. It seems like we've got some folks that really don't like the way we do modern production agriculture, though, and that's a problem.
They don't like what we do. The problem being they don't even know what we do because, I started this nearly 20 years ago, as you indicated, Ron, and I did it because people didn't know enough about where their food comes from. And today I spend as much time correcting the information because now they know too much about where their food comes from. The problem is, too much of what they know isn't so. So you have to break down all of that misinformation. And I think somewhat new in the last 20 years, is that there's an entire cottage industry that has learned how to make money by selling fear, and the consequences are not necessarily the farmer. This is what we have to express to people, and I want to get to the mainstream consumers. The farmer will adapt, will modify whatever type of production the marketplace is demanding, but it's going to cost more money. It's going to take more resources to get the end result, the same end result. The person that should be jumping up and down is the working class American families that are being forced to spend more money for their daily food supply simply because the elitists of this country are making a lot of noise about what they don't really know. And so at the end of the day, it's 320 million Americans that are paying the price for what the food producers are being forced to jump through unnecessarily.
You talked about it being a cottage industry. It's big business.
It is big business. We can track one animal rights organization that's been very prevalent in Oklahoma to the tune of $120 million a year. That's what they make, and they promote that they care about animals when, in fact, it's documented they spend less than half of 1%. To benefit the animal. A lot of this started, ironically, during the Vietnam War. And at the end of the Vietnam War, people realized, hey, they were sending us money because they thought we were helping the cause. So we need a new cause. And it's just grown since 1970 through the creation of the EPA. And one of the first emotional scares was DDT. DDT did nothing but improve the planet and improve human health. And yet we banned it. The EPA banned it in 1973 because of emotional pleas with zero science behind it. And that was like the impetus to just continue to grow this marketing of fear and costing the consumer amounts of money that they don't need to be. I had one lady on a plane the other day. We flew from Dallas to Denver. So it's like an hour and a half flight. And we were walking through all of the purchase decisions that she makes. She was spending $7 a dozen on eggs. When we got to Denver, we landed, and she turned to me and she said, you know, I just did a little quick math in my head. I think you saved my family $700 a month in our food bill. That's what people need to recognize, mm-hmm. is that they've been sold a bill of goods, and they, you know, chemicals are something that improve our lives. The number one consumed chemical in the world, dihydrogen monoxide, water. And yet it's the number one chemical killer in the world. 42,000 people a year globally die from some sort of a water-related incident. And yet we all drink water every day. We need to. Caffeine, number two consumed chemical in the world. It's a pesticide. It's a pesticide that the coffee plant produces to protect itself from insects. And so while people go to the grocery store, try to avoid anything that's had any chemical application ever, and then go buy that Starbucks high latte coffee, they don't realize the hypocrite that they truly are. So it's getting that factual information to the everyday people so that they can make more informed decisions about their food supply.
One of your sessions here, we'll be talking about helping average farmers, average ranchers, folks in the farm community, how they can be a better agricultural advocate. What are a couple of tips you're going to share?
Is that what Sam said I'm going to do?
Yeah. So start your,
I know that.
Start your preparation now.
Okay. I think it was yesterday, wasn't it? You know, on November the 8th, everybody was paying attention to the presidential election, including me. But I don't think often enough we have thought about the most important political decisions that are made, and those are those closest to our house. McLean County elects a sheriff. I just use that as an example of here in Oklahoma. They elect county commissioners, and they are the most important people in the political system. Too many times they don't know that. Too many times they have turned that local county decision-making power over to Oklahoma City. Too many times Oklahoma City has turned it over to Washington, D.C. And so my message was quite simple. If you really care about the future of our country, you need to start engaging more locally. School boards, county commissioners, and your county sheriff. Those are the three most important figures in your county. It's not in Washington, D.C. And quite frankly, I think I'm echoing the sentiments of many people that are very excited about the confirmation announcement on Friday of your past attorney general as a director of the EPA. I happen to serve on the President Trump's advisory committee for agriculture, and people were saying, why don't we have a Secretary of Agriculture? Why don't we have a Secretary of Agriculture? Secretary of Agriculture, it came, and I'm very proud of Sonny Perdue and think he's the perfect person for the position. But food producers of this country today are more dependent upon the director of the EPA than we are the USDA. And we need to put, for example, back to that local issue, you know, our school lunch programs are a disaster. We're not feeding kids to improve their cognition and improve their overall mental health. We're restricting all of the basic nutrients that do a great job in feeding the brain. And the USDA has a local food program that beef producers can be a part of. And last week I did several stories on beef producers who are donating animals to the local school system so that the kids can eat an 80-20 hamburger that was produced and donated from that county. All politics are local, and we need to empower everyday citizens, whether you're a farmer, a rancher, a dry cleaner, or an insurance person in your county. Get involved in your county. That's where we've been letting the ball get by us too often.
You can go back to Scott Pruitt for a moment. Obviously now administrator of EPA, totally different mindset than what we saw with Gina McCarty. What are your hopes from some of the stories you've done about things being different at the Environmental Protection Agency?
Balance. We need balance to understand that, and Oklahoma's been in the middle of this fight for a long time. If I were to go anywhere in downtown, Norman, Moore, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and ask people what are nitrates and phosphorus, they would all probably say they're toxic pollutants, when in fact they're essential nutrients. and when managed properly, they make everything flourish. Great example that never got told. Everybody heard about the Flint, Michigan water quality crisis with lead contamination. There's two components of agriculture that mainstream media has not shared in that regard. And that is the reason that the lead contamination became a problem to begin with was that these old lead pipes had been for years coated with phosphorus, regular old phosphorus that farmers apply to their fields, that chickens produce in the manure, and it was being applied and coated on these lead pipes, and that was neutralizing the lead so that it did not get into the water supply. Well, some infinite wisdom of a city council decision said that that's costing us money. Let's just try to save some money right there. Boom. You know the rest of the story. The other part of that story is that milk, the consumption of fluid milk, also neutralizes lead, and it really allows mitigation of the body. So when kids in Michigan, Flint, Michigan, had lead, a high level of lead in their body, the consumption of milk would allow their body to mitigate that. Dairymen in Michigan donated truckloads of milk. It did a great job in helping people get through that crisis. And I'm curious if you heard that anywhere from any media source outside of agricultural media. It never got told. So I want to bring it back to, and that's why I said balance. Yes, too much nitrate and phosphorus in our nation's water supply is dangerous. But equally dangerous is not enough. In fact, right now we are told, any city is told, that if they have 11 parts per million of nitrate in their water supply, you have to boil the water because it's dangerous. 11 parts per million. And yet mother's breast milk has significantly more, up to 100 parts per million of nitrate at day one. So my question is, what does the U.S. government know that God hasn't figured out yet? I bring it back to balance. It is about balance, and we need to have adequate regulation to protect and improve our environment, which we have done as farmers, and we need to have the limited restrictions on continuing to move forward, maintaining the balance.